Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today. Welcome to filmandtvreview.com. Catch the latest film, TV, and streamed show reviews every week. The views and opinions expressed by the authors and those providing comments are theirs alone. They do not reflect the views, opinions or position of filmandtvreview.com or their respective parent companies or affiliates. Filmandtvreview.com makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information in this program and is for entertainment purposes only. Episodes may contain adult humor and language. For full terms and conditions, see filmandtvreview.com.
Hello there, and welcome to another monthly edition of Film and TV Review. I'm joined by regular hosts, Andrew, Richard, and Alfonso, and today they'll be discussing a few of the last month's releases, and we'll, including Project Hail Mary, of course, Peaky Blinders, Scream 7, Apex, Euphoria, War Machine, and Invincible even. But anyway, we'll crack on straight on. So first, obviously, it's been a while, but we've caught up with it. It was a big release, actually. Mm-hmm. It was a science fiction novel, or based on science fiction novel of the author of The Martian. That is Project Hail Mary, getting another quite a big anticipation of that, a lot of trailers with that. It's Ryan Gosling in the lead, I think, as a teacher of sorts, or a jobbing teacher who's been called on to save the world by embarking on a mission of, well, a mystery at the beginning, but then things get revealed as they pan out. I saw this, I think most of you guys saw this as well. A lot of anticipated. I was comparing this to The Martian, but what did you think? Say, Richard, Hail Mary, Project Hail Mary, was that...
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's actually one of the few great cinematic experiences of 2026 so far for me. What I mean is that with this new age of streaming, etc., you always consider, when you think about going to the movie theater, is it worth it going to the movie theater to see this movie or this movie, etc.? And Project Hail Mary definitely is worth buying a ticket for a movie theater experience, I believe. Mm-hmm. It has all the good ingredients. I mean, in my opinion, anyway. I don't know if you want to go in details about the plot or not.
I think we should, because it's past enough now.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it, if you have seen it, I think most people have seen it. People can come back and see it after, listen to this.
You say, it is in a way.
I think you should talk about it. We want to review.
Yeah.
Is it worth?
Absolutely, yeah.
It's worth seeing, I suppose. But
a mix.
I think, let's assume most people have seen it by now.
Yeah. It's kind of a mix between this kind of a space opera, and also it has the humor of that you will find in a lot of work by these guys, Lord and Miller, who actually you can see that touch, let's say. They are kind of famous for the animated Spider-Man stuff from recent years, the two movies. They are, it's very At first, it's a very funny story about, yes, this random guy who has no space experience and who is sent on this mission to save Europe, as you said. Well, I will not get into details about what is the threat, but because it's like a mumbo jumbo science, but that's not the point. And yeah, he has to save the Earth. He's like the last person that you would send to a mission like this, on another galaxy or solar system or whatever. He's kind of by himself for different reasons for most of the movie. So that's why the acting is so important, because it's really Ryan Gosling is always on screen. 99% of the time he's on screen, and he does for me a great job for what he has to do. He has this natural, I believe, again, humor and a kind of a funny guy. But at the same time, he has a few scenes where obviously he's stranded and he understands actually the. He can be sometimes a bit emotional, get emotional because obviously his loneliness is an important issue, and he meets at some point, so spoiler alert, he meets so at some point an alien form, kind of a funny alien form at first, coming from another, when again, another galaxy or whatever, and they will bond to save both of their species, let's say. So that's kind of the plot in a nutshell. So yeah, as I said, I think it has all the ingredients for a success. Again, the sci-fi spectacle that you have on the big screen, the funny dialogues, a character that you care about, and yeah, I think that it's a good pacing. It has a good also soundtrack. Yeah, I honestly believe that it will become a kind of a not a masterpiece, but a cult classic that people will rewatch over and over again in the next few years. Yeah.
Anyone else seen Hail Mary and want to add anything to that?
Yeah. Actually, I don't know about the. I think it's the marketing that maybe spoiled it a little. I mean, a lot of people read the novel, but a lot of it, especially at a later point, focused on the character of Rocky, as they call the alien life form. Marketing for this thing or that. And so people probably knew that going in, even if they hadn't read the novel. Something about seeing the film versus the novel, well, maybe not versus the novel, but just seeing the film versus the marketing is that it's not really chronological order because you see him, or you see Ryan Gosling's character on the ship, trying to do the mission, but a lot of what you see on Earth is flashbacks. So it's not like the marketing where, like Armageddon or something like that, where he's on Earth and then goes off. Here it's a lot, the story is told, was it in media res, I think is that the expression? He's already on the ship and he's trying to figure out what's going on. And then that's when you flash back to stuff on Earth. And then throughout the film, it's back and forth between him being on the ship and then flashing back to, being on Earth and how he came to be, where he is. So a lot of the strength of the film is just the relationship between the main human character and the alien life form, Rocky, and just how you come to really feel for this life form, which looks just like a pile of rocks, since the nickname or name that's given. But that does provide the heart of the film. And without going into too much, it's just the idea of this person who never really connected with anyone and connecting to this new life form. There's also some reveal that happens late in the film, and it makes it kind of wonder about certain things, and it plays upon certain tropes for this kind of thing without trying to explain too much more. So it makes it go, okay, it's a little different. You don't usually see that in this type of film, but yeah, no, I think my main concern with the film, and it's not so much the film itself. It's just I saw it as part of a group, and they wanted to see it in a certain format, but not the IMAX. And this is probably one of those situations where you probably want to see it in the biggest screen possible. There's not even not a lot of films like that. You can say, well, I see it in IMAX or see it in, just some other screen in the cinema. But here you probably want to see it on the biggest screen possible. Because there were certain moments where I was looking and it was kind of like, yeah, this feels a little too small. I wish I had seen it in the IMAX. So that's just an observation that you don't really hear much with films, but I would say it's certainly true in this one. So that's
Okay. Yeah. It was definitely a bit more of a light-hearted film compared to The Martian. Like, so as Andrew Weir obviously was wrote this, and that I think The Martian was a bit more, for me, is a bit felt a bit more satisfying because it seemed a very much a mission-based, a bit more grounded kind of thing. But this is kind of like more of a almost like a fairy tale, really. But I mean, it's a nice relationship. But yeah, the strength of it was definitely Ryan Gosling as. It's difficult to lead, get those actors who can actually lead an entire, almost a one person job almost. So it's like, I mean, like Tom Hanks in Castaway, but Ryan Gosling, yeah, very impressed by how he can actually pull that off. It did feel a bit, yes, I mean, it's a lighter tone and more optimistic. So, but it's nicely done. Yeah, I say not a masterpiece, but it is a, good, wholesome fun, just a whole package, and then, be done and done, really. But yeah, if you catch up for it on a weekend, yeah, you can watch it on streaming. Right, next. This was a title that came out early on, a kind of like a follow-up sequel to a series, which was Peaky Blinders, which was popular for a while. This is Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, and I think this follows on afterwards. Cillian Murphy as the title character, Thomas Shelby or Tommy Shelby. I think returning, and I think this is set during World War II or around that era. So we've got a so I mean, who were big fans of the television series? Because I was really on and off, but anyone obviously watched it, and was it worth actually having a film like this after the fact?
I think that the second question is the most important one because I think that question can be asked for any of the show is except for money, why would you actually go back to a TV show that had a proper ending? That obviously this question would be asked about Peaky Blinders, sorry, and all the shows that might have this this idea of actually doing a conclusion as a movie or whatever. Yeah, I Peaky Blinders, I think, is a remarkable TV show, first of all. That's for sure. It definitely entered the pop culture in the last 15 or 10 years. Great acting, visually kind of beautiful show, actually. I don't know how much money they spent on it over the spend over 6 years, but is it a BBC production in the first place, by the way?
Yeah, it was BBC, that series,
Because
definitely.
it is on Netflix, but I
Because
think
this
it's
is
on
on
BBC.
Netflix, yeah, which is like, I'm not even, I guess, I don't know how it actually that works, but I assume it must be a partnership. But for a film, yeah, Netflix must have already paid out for it and the BBC didn't. So I don't know how that deal works because it wasn't shown on BBC. This was just merely on Netflix.
Because to give you an idea, I think it's the only BBC show, let's put it this way, that you can have the whole thing, all seasons, always on Netflix. I'm trying to think about another BBC show purely created in England by the BBC that you will find internationally and in Netflix France, you will have all seasons. So I'm guessing Netflix must have some part of the production somewhere, must have paid a huge bill, but I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it was a great show, I think. Now about this conclusion, because definitely the objective, the goal was to give a proper conclusion to, especially to the main character, as you mentioned, Tommy Shelby. No spoilers for the end of the show. Well, I don't know. No spoilers. obviously, if he's dying in this movie, obviously he survived the end of the TV show. So, yeah, so at the end of the TV show, yeah, he survived in a way. But in my opinion, all the characters' arc are done at the end of the TV show. So here, yes, they are in the middle of of World War II. They have to fight the Nazis in Birmingham again. The interesting part compared to other, well, the original idea is to introduce a grown-up son of Tommy Shelby, because he was very young, obviously, in previous seasons, in the seasons. And he's played by a very talented Barry Keoghan. I don't think it's a great movie per se. I think it's a good conclusion to the story of Tommy Shelby. I think that the strength of the movie was, again, perhaps it could have been the relationship between the father and the son, because the son is kind of making all the wrong decisions in his life in the first half of the movie. And it's a shame that actually they don't share the screen so much in this movie, both of them, Cillian Murphy and Barry Keoghan, because I think they only share like a couple of times at the end of the movie. Because it's a very simple story in the end. It's just Barry Keoghan working for the Nazis at first, and then he just need a father figure that comes back and show him the right thing, and then he sacrifices himself for the cause or for his son or whatever. I don't think that the plot is definitely that great, and I don't think that it was worth the wait for what it is. Now, that being said, yes, it is a proper conclusion for Tommy Shelby, so I'm guessing fans of the show will like this just for that reason. Yeah.
Hey, anyone else saw or just add anything to that? No? Okay. Next. Well, this is something that will never, obviously, you can keep doing these forever because obviously you've never run out of material, but that's Scream 7. I don't know how they come up with such new material and it's plot for each one, but
That's the
I'm
thing, like
guessing this
it's not new
involves a
material.
new ghost face killer emerges in the town where Sidney Prescott has built a life and then trying to get over it. But I'm guessing a killer reemerges. This is just me surmising. I haven't seen it, but am I wildly wrong? And why is this unmissable? Who saw Scream 7? Who's going to admit to seeing it? I guess Andrew, you did, didn't you?
Well, yeah, we saw it as part. Well, a lot of people did see it opening weekend, and I saw it as part of a meetup. So, I guess they wanted to see it. That's probably there's not really not much that would really be memorable about this, because it's probably best to go see it in a very as I did in a crowded auditorium. Opening weekend, because there's a lot of people who are into it, who are calling out to the film and making comments, like, oh, it happens before in general, I guess, but here it was very much like, oh my God, or don't do this, don't do that type of things, calling out to the screen. So, interactive, but yeah, if I were watching at home by myself, I probably wouldn't think much. That being said, the film. It's not so much that I found the film necessarily terrible, but it's just that the reveal, without giving too much away, that's kind of what these films come down to, is doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
No, I mean
I agree. I agree. I completely agree. Yeah.
well, I mean that's the general, maybe almost unanimous to have seen the film. It's like the reaction upon seeing it is like, really? That's really the reaction. And that's so it's just like, and again, without going on about what happened in real life to bring us to this, I'll just say that, yeah, a lot of the Scream films have had things happen in real life that they've had to deal with, and they've come to varying quality. I mean, the first movie is still the best, but the other sequels, they've had things that have happened in real life that they've had to adapt to, and they certainly had some challenges. And with those challenges, they could have still made a possibly decent film, but I think it's just that whatever they originally came up with, and then they had to scrap that idea and have a story centered around Sydney.
Again.
Yeah, they could have had something, Sydney and Gail and some of the other characters. Yeah, they could have had a decent dish film. And I was seeing it in the crowd that I saw it in. There was some entertainment from that, but I don't think it's really something that I would be like revisiting. There's some moments that were kind of like, yeah, that's pretty cool, or that's a pretty cool kill, or I mean, there's a lot made of McKenna Grace being in the film, but I'm not going to say much more about that. I mean, it just, but yeah, I mean, there's some moments that were kind of like, yeah, that's cool, but I'm not thinking it's something that people are going to revisit among the Scream installments. So,
Okay. Wow. You'll be glad to know Scream 8 is officially in
yeah.
development by
Yeah,
Spyglass, so
that's the
maybe.
problem. That's the problem with this horror slasher movie, that actually they cost nothing to produce when you think about it. So anyway, you will have 1,000 of them as long as actually they break even quite easily, to
Yeah,
be
yeah.
honest. Go ahead, Andrew, sorry.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, if Radio Silence or whatever the filmmakers call themselves were to come back, maybe it'd be interesting, but I don't think they, I mean, that's a whole other story. So, if they brought those people back, but going forward as is, I don't know what they could come up with. So,
Well, I think it did quite well, Scream 7, though. I think box
but
office
yeah,
it
because the opening weekend, it was very front loaded. It was just
Yeah,
after.
I mean, on Wikipedia it says 45 million budget, box office 214.
Wow. That's quite impressive.
Well,
Yeah,
it's still like.
what it is, yeah, it's impressive, trust me, because honestly, it's a bullshit movie, to
The
be honest.
brand, and that brought people out opening weekend. It's just after that, it didn't really have much in the way of box office legs. Not that it was being expected to, but that's basically what it was. It was opening weekend. The brand brought people out.
Yeah.
After that, it was just kind of like, yeah.
I mean, we talked about X-Men and Transformers as good examples of franchise where sometimes it doesn't make sense anymore, the chronology of events, etc. I mean, Scream is another level, to be honest, because there are things that makes no sense, as Andrew mentioned, about the killer in this one. But also, I mean, I know that there are like different issues, the cast has been fired or whatever, which I'm not going into details anyway. But still, I mean, it's like they say, okay, so we don't care if you watched the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth installment. We're going to remove them all and we're going to just do like a sequel, the first one. It's almost like that. I say him, how can you do this? It's so stupid. It is so stupid. And yeah, and even the characters are so one-dimensional. All of them, all these young actors, you say, okay, you're just here to be killed. And that's all you're gonna bring to the table. You're gonna be killed. That's so sad. It's so sad.
Well, one of the actors I was kind of maybe hoping a bit more for, trying to remember the actor's name, but he's the one who plays Sam on Gen V. So he's one of the cast members in this one. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if people will really remember most of the, I mean, other than Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox, maybe the Meeks Martin twins. I don't know if that's something that, but yeah, I don't know if people really remember a lot of them. So.
What I mean is that when you look at the franchise, you say that the first one is the best one. I kind of disagree because I believe actually that they, well, not it's, it's a very good movie, the first one. It definitely changed the way you watch horror movies with teenagers, etc. Fair enough, but they had some ideas in sequels that they never actually used for future installments. But I'm trying to say that I really enjoyed the fourth one that brought some ideas, by social media and stuff, etc.
That's
But
interesting.
then they gave up on this idea completely in the fifth one. And then they had other ideas in the fifth and the sixth about the character of Billy and his descendant, etc. And
Oh, you.
again, they forget about it for completely because of obviously of the cast, etc. But still, they
Right.
could actually work up, try to get a plot out of it. I don't know, but just for me, it's almost insulting the people who are not a fan, but people who are the fans who are treated to just to say, okay, we don't care about if you enjoy that part. We will never talk about it ever again. So, then why do you introduce these plots if you don't want to go all the way to the end? I mean, that's crazy. I don't know.
It's a shame, yeah, because you've got so much avenues for character legacy and character through lines because you obviously it does well and then you come familiar. If you're familiar with brand, then sometimes you want these characters, a familiar character in a new environment or whatever, which they do, I suppose, with those two female leads. But then you could expand it a bit if you want some
Yeah.
legs or something. But, but maybe it would turn into Fast and Furious if it did,
Well,
But
I'm
that's the
pretty sure
gold standard, obviously.
there will be 15 of them, to be honest, if it keeps going like that. Yeah.
All right then. Okay, next. I think a Netflix film. I think it's a survival movie with a good lead actress is always good when she's given good material. She's always delivers. It's Charlize Theron in Apex. I'm not sh don't know too much about this, but I think it's a mountain climber or a survivalist or some kind of like independent. I know, Trek or something like that, but who it seems intriguing, and I think it's done really well in the Netflix streaming charts. Survivalist horror, I think maybe. Apex, who saw Apex? Alfonso, intriguing enough, good. I mean, Charles Fran's always a safe bet actually when she's running whatever she's in. What did you think of Apex? What is the premise actually of it, just to clarify?
Well, it's basically what you said. She is a person who likes this kind of things in nature, like climbing the highest mountains and going kayaking through the Australian wilderness, and I don't know, all this nature kind of adventures. Well, she goes alone for certain reasons to one of these kayaking kind of expeditions to the Australian wilderness, and she finds there the character of Taron Egerton, who is the antagonist and who will be basically chasing her in a non-romantic way, I would say. In another, but this definitely he's interested in chasing her. And the movie will ask who is the apex of this film. Charlize. She's quite resourceful and she has gone to the gym. Or Taron, who has also gone to the gym and is basically mad as a hatter or the Mad Hatter in this film. She's a little bit depressed. He's a little bit euphoric, but both are, I don't know, like destined to meet each other. They have to battle in a way in this wilderness and see who survives. So I like both actors. I like it's a movie that it's let's say it's just 1 hour and a half, and it's good enough. Good enough. It's marginally better than Trash, the other kind of action movie that Netflix is promoting these days about the attacking sharks in a coastal town. This is also adventure, and but I kind of enjoyed both. But this is I would say this is the better one. And the characters are not really that much developed in either one. This one, I guess I would have probably made them a little bit more developed, but I don't complain because it is what it is.
Yeah.
It is action, chase, more action, but it doesn't get into more than that. So, I mean, it goes to the point. Also, trash. Both are very, very short. I guess I don't know if it's Netflix that has like Cat Coast in that way. They just want to sell you something that you can say, okay, I'm gonna watch that. It's like Charlize Theron, or it's sharks attacking, or it's like this. It's like a strong concept, but once you're there, they don't really care much if you're gonna watch 1 hour and a half or 2 hours and 2 hours and a half. If you're gonna be satisfied with 1 hour and a half, you're gonna be in and out. It's basically an in and out film. Quick, you get the thrills. The thrills are gone, you're out. You don't get much character development, you don't get much anything. I kind of like it because I'm not looking for more, really. Here I was like, and funnily enough, I think both end in a little bit of an anticlimax or something that you might expect more, especially Apex. I would say it's more thrilling, I would say, before the final climax, which is not bad. And if, I mean, it's not bad. I mean, and both actors are fantastic in their own kind of ways. So you could do worse than having a film with Charlize and Taron, and Eric Bana is a little bit in it as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you got
So,
a good cast there. So I can see why, you'd find it a bit frustrating that, hey, you can give them some really good stuff, but that does seem to be like you said, that model that Netflix had coming out of COVID, where it was their B movie, their great B movie of the week, and then but expensive, but then done and done kind of thing. So.
but these ones are kind of like, it's not the same thing. It's not like, it's not the big, like these movies with The Rock and Ryan Reynolds and all this that had they had bigger budgets than this. These are much, much more budget conscious. They just wanna do something that has enough of an appeal, a good, let's say, a good, interesting plot device that can bring you into the film, but they won't spend much. Not this time. Netflix is not spending what they used to spend, and I think these films are, to me, they are a little bit better than those ones. I don't need Red Notice, those kind of things.
Oh, yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Watch it, actually.
Yeah, okay.
Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today.
Next. So you've what do Euphoria, which season 3, I think, is it? It's kind of like it's been a bit of a gap between the initial, I mean, quite popular first season and second, and made kind of stars out of all of them, actually. A lot of them, the main, like Zendaya and even Jacob Elordi, have done some really well stuff since then. But they kind of return here, and it's got Sydney Sweeney, I think, in there. So I'm guessing you all who watched this, I mean, Alfonso, you watched this, didn't you? Has it been a bit of a gap since seasons 1 and 2? It feels like it, but.
Euphoria. Yeah. It has been a lot of a gap.
Yeah.
More or less. They all have become famous. They have shot many films, some more than others, but yeah, in general. And now they are out of high school in another completely different situation. Well, it's really Euphoria, the reunion. If Euphoria was kind of a fantasy inside of a high school, this is one of these fantasies where the characters are only like 5 years out of high school, but they could be like in their 40s or something. I don't know. So they are not doing what regular 23-year-olds would be doing at all. They are in like in sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of or OnlyFans suburban life or whatever. I mean, I guess some people might be involved in all those stuff, but the Sam Levinson is playing again that kind of fantasy with drugs, sex, music, good lighting, interesting. Like, I have never seen a strip club with better lighting than this show, where everybody's working there. Even Rosalia is working there. Like, well, not the re not she's not playing herself, but the female form appears naked a lot, very beautifully shot, very appealing. It's clear that this is not a straight woman directing this series, but it's a feast for the eyes. So it
What about the
is
plot? You haven't told
the
me.
plot. Is there wait, is there
I
a plot? No,
know.
yeah. There is a plot. There is a plot. I mean, how can I say it? Rue is still, like Zendaya is still involved in drug related activities that leads her to be on a strip club, working for a strip club owner also. And the other ones are Nate is married with Jacob Elordi, who is Nate, is married with Sydney Sweeney, who is Casey, and they have a suburban life, although with their problems. Then Alexa Demi, who is playing Maddie, is a social influencer who will also connect with them. They are preparing their wedding, which is also a way to get the cast together again for because mostly before that they are mostly in their own separate plots, let's say. I don't think that they shot a lot of it together because of, I guess, film schedules or something. But it's a lot of star power. So you're gonna enjoy watching it. You might find it a little bit too much sex and drugs and stuff, but it's enough, let's say, interesting. The plot is interesting enough. The way that it's shot, I think Sam Levinson has still something special in the way that he likes to shot his TV series. I would say it's and you like if you like Euphoria, there's something here for you, even if it's not the real experience of the high school show.
May I ask if have you seen the whole season three?
No, it's not out. It's not out yet. The whole
Ah,
season
it's not
three.
out. Okay.
No, only 3 episodes.
Is there do you think it will there be an ending, or what I mean is that do you think that season three will be the last one,
It
or
is the last one.
are they planning to do future installments?
No, I
Okay.
think it's the last one for sure. I mean, I think the cast must have in their contracts that they could if HBO wanted, they could do it up to a season three. That's why they have Return,
Ah, okay.
because they were already contracted to do it. But if not, they wouldn't have Return, I would
Yeah,
say. I
because
would say I'm not.
yeah, but is, I mean, they don't need Euphoria anymore, kind of.
No, they don't. They don't need Euphoria anymore, and it's basically, I think, because HBO wanted them, of course, to be in Euphoria again. Because it's, I mean, and it's fair, let's say, because Euphoria is it was the launching pad for most of them. So, I mean, it's a good way to pay
Oh yeah, absolutely.
back. Pay your dues, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah, I can see why it wouldn't. Yeah, they've all done very well, actually. I mean, on the modern
And it's
cinema scheme.
Euphoria really, really is one show that really you can understand why stars come out of Euphoria, because it's a mix of being really well shot and very sexy. So if you cannot make a star of that.
Okay, next. Now, ready or not, we are two. This is what I'm guessing, a horror sequel to a survivor's horror. I'd never seen the first one. Don't know much about it, but it seems
It's
successful enough
horror
to.
comedy. It's horror comedy, I
It's
call
a
it.
horror comedy. Richard Phyllis in what is Ready or Not, even if you haven't seen the first one. What's this one? What's the premise of?
Actually, it's kind of difficult. Well, no, you can enjoy the second one without watching the first one, but still, because there's a few quick recap with some flashbacks at the in the beginning of the second one, I'm guessing. No, okay, I have to sum up. For someone who doesn't like horror and too much blood, I think the way actually these movies are made make it okay, because as I said, it's kind of funny most of the time. So yeah, it's Samara Weaving who is the main playing the main character in these two movies, and quite quickly, the first movie, she is supposed to get married to, well, she gets married to a very rich guy who is the heir of a very powerful and rich family in US or UK or whatever. And on the night of when she just got married, she realizes that actually that it's her in-laws are actually kind of a crazy Satanist family. Sorry, well, I think crazy Satanist family who has a tradition where they play a game every time there's a new member in the family. So she is a new member of the family, and they
Your
play.
average wedding.
Sorry,
Your average wedding. Sorry.
I'm explaining badly, as you say.
No, I said.
It's your average wedding, he said.
It's an average wedding. Yeah, absolutely. And they play hide and seek at midnight on the night of the wedding, literally. And she literally is hunted by every single member of her in-law family, in the whole castle, and they have all different weapons, etc. It's very funny, I swear to God. Literally, the only way for her to escape is to survive until dawn, which she does. And because she survives until dawn, every single one of the family members of her in-laws die, exploding. Literally, they explode because they literally made a pact in the 17th century or whatever, or 18th century, with kind of the devil or whatever, kind of the forced pact. And if they fail this tradition, they die. So they all die. She survives, and here's the second installment of this franchise. I guess it's a franchise now. It's gonna be a franchise. So straight away, she just survived this night. She goes to the hospital, and at the hospital, it's like she doesn't have time to even rest because her sister comes to visit. And at the moment her sister comes to visit, some people come to try to kill her again. And who are these people? It's because actually the second movie is interesting because, although it's kind of again the same story, is people trying to chase her and her sister to kill her. The guys who wrote this movie at least it's an original idea, and they try to expand the world of Freddy or not, because this time we find out that this family, very powerful family of the first movie, is only one of five or six powerful family who own the world, literally they control the world. And when one of his family is killed, and there is a survivor of that game, Samara Weaving character, they literally have to, all of this family, sit around the table and decide who's going to be the new seat on the high chair, which is like the big boss of these big bosses. A kind of a competition between all these families. And because she's a survivor, which never happened, a survivor of this game, of the first movie, for some reason, if any member of any of these powerful families kill her, they would get the high seat. But that's
Yeah,
kind of the rules of that game, kind of to summarize.
because she was the previous family had the high seat,
Yeah,
and
thank
she
you.
killed
Exactly,
all
yeah.
of them.
Thank you, yeah. So yeah, and you have all these new families. One of them is David Cronenberg's family, by the way. He does a cameo in this movie. He dies after 5 minutes, but David Cronenberg in this movie is funny. Sarah Michelle Gellar in this movie. The lawyer of the devil, let's call him this way, is Elijah Wood. So it's kind of funny cast. So yeah, again, it's kind of for 90 minutes, it's kind of, I said, hunting Samara Weaving and her sister. She obviously survives. And spoiler alert, she finds another way to kill them all. So there will be probably a further installment. But it's always, as I said, it's always, again, it's not a horror movie. It's quite funny. I don't know how to explain it, but it's because all these people who try to kill her are not professional killers. So most of them, actually, they don't know what they are doing, or they are very bad at what they're doing. So that's kind of funny as well. She's a kind of a funny character herself, because she finds new strength every time to survive. But at the same time, she looks like a John Wick female version, because, I mean, she must have like five different times where she break bones, and she has part of her hands that has been cut five times, and so many things happen to her, but she's still standing for some reason. So yeah, I think it's an enjoyable moment. I would not say go watch in a movie theater, because it's not worth buying a ticket, but when it comes to digital or streaming, it's worth watching it.
Okay. Probably it's a nice horror comedy then, not
Yeah,
too
it's not scary at all. Again,
not scary.
speaking of, trust me, if I can say that, it's true. It's definitely not scary at
Oh
all.
yeah. That's good. Yeah, if you're not a huge horror fan, but
Exactly.
still, oh okay, not fun. Yeah, that's pretty good. Sounds quite intriguing. Okay. Next, War Machine, which so it follows like some recruits of a special ops team, but who maybe encounter a deadly force from beyond the world. Actually, it looks sounds like science fiction, which is actually makes me a bit more intrigued than if it was just a war movie. But you've got some good strong leads, Helen Richardson, Jai Courtney. Else? And Dennis Quaid. It's always good to see Dennis Quaid. Who saw War Machine?
Andrew, have you seen it as well? Am I the only one who's seen it? So Andrew, you've seen it, I think, a long time ago.
Yeah, I saw it a while ago, so
You want to say something about it?
I'm trying to remember, but it's basically it's not it was entertaining, I guess, but how memorable it was. Basically, to set it up is that you have the protagonist who's in Afghanistan at the very beginning of the film, the prologue, and he loses his brother due to some kind of explosive device, insurgents, and just before his brother is killed, he has this arrangement to have this interest to join the Army Rangers branch of the military or sub branch, And so after the prologue, some time passes, and the protagonist, I guess to honor his brother's memory, wishes, is in training to join the Army Rangers. So they're on this exercise with another team. And it's while they're on this exercise that they encounter some kind of what they assume is part of the mission or part of the exercise. And it turns out to be the beginning of this attack by this extraterrestrial
Metal Gear. Metal Gear.
giant
Metal Gear.
robot.
It's a Metal Gear.
Metal Gear, yes.
It's a Metal Gear.
Metal Gear, yes.
Yeah.
But not quite. So, and so the rest of the film is the protagonist's group trying to survive the attack from this Metal Gear or giant, not Transformer, but giant robot. And that's basically the bulk of the film. At the same time, the protagonist is dealing with his own issues of, having lost his brother from the events of the beginning of the film. So that's basically the film.
Yeah, like the same thing, yeah, I agree. The only thing that I can add, well, two things I can add, actually. That's my opinion, what I'm about to say. I have a feeling that this movie, although produced by Netflix, must have also have some kind of, I don't know, not help, but yeah, maybe help by the US Army almost. Because for me, there were a lot of scenes where it was kind of a movie that tries to portray the US Army like this great assemble of men who actually can save the world. I know that we see that in many movies that the US Army will save the world, but in this movie particularly, it was crazy how much they actually emphasize, is that the word? They actually focus on this. I mean, they have like zero chance of surviving during the movie, especially at the end, because they like a cliffhanger when you say, okay, so this is the end of the world, because what's happening at the end of it? But still, there's like montage about the crazy, I don't know if it's the Delta Force of the Rangers who are gonna save us all, etc. What's going it made me think of Starship Troopers, but if Starship Troopers was not ironic. Because in Starship Troopers, you have all these scenes where you actually they say, yeah, good, the infantry will save us, etc. But it's obviously they joke around, they say they make fun of this idea. I'm pretty sure that these scenes in War Machine were actually have to be taken seriously, which is a problem to us. But anyway, that's my opinion. And the second thing I want to say is, yeah, obviously, and the director acknowledged that is def the villain of the movie is definitely inspired by Metal Gear Solid movie video games. I mean, I didn't know anything about it, but after 10 minutes with the thing, I said, "This is the Metal Gear, but I played 1,000 hours of it." So he has the same weapons. I know, okay, I'm being a nerd here. It's the same weapons, the same way of his behaving. I said, "That's crazy, is it?" And I find out that Hideo Kojima, who is the creator of Metal Gear Solid franchise, actually is happy and acknowledged and is happy that someone actually finally made the Metal Gear on the big screen or on the small screen, actually, since actually we're not gonna get a movie. Well, that was true until last month when War Machine was announced, released. But now we're gonna have probably a Metal Gear Solid movie, but anyway, that's another topic.
You've been waiting decades for your
Literally,
solid
literally, like it's been since 1998 actually that they announced actually movie
Oh my
adaptation.
God.
Yeah, but
Well,
I don't know what to expect. But yeah, anyway.
we never know what to expect with these
Yeah.
adaptations. Right. From that to another intergalactic threat or series, which has been intriguing, that is Invincible, which returned on Amazon Prime. Follows the comic strip with a superhero with a bit of teenage angst. It's Mark Grayson as a as the titular character. who has to balance his kind of like family life and his parentage. And I've been watching this since seasons 1 and 2 and 3, and it's been always very good. It's actually, strangely enough, sometimes it's the best kind of like writing on TV for and it is an animated cartoon, but it is it's quite intriguing. Andrew, you watched this as well, season 3 or 4, I think. Well, I don't
No,
remember.
season four. I think the showrunner said they're going to try to do the whole run of the comics, but that could take a while. So hopefully, it doesn't take too many years,
Yeah.
especially with the gap between seasons and giving time to the animators to do their work. So
Yes.
I think that's one of the issues, not so much of what you actually see, but the idea that what you see is good. It's just the time to incorporate the stuff from the comics and trying to do that so that it doesn't wind up taking decades. So no, I mean you want to give time to, like I said, the animators, and I think that is the one of the complaints. So that show is good and that people want to see more, and not to have too long gap between seasons. So, and also I guess one of the earlier seasons where they had like a break between within the season itself, so that didn't go over too well. So you'd have it be continuous, not 4 episodes, then a few months and 4 more episodes. So I mean, what you have is good without going into what actually will happen. It is adapting the comics or trying to be relatively close to what is in the comics. So to give it so far is that you have Mark, or as he's known, also Invincible, titled character, trying to deal with the effects of the previous season or seasons and the potential attack on, I mean, there have already been attacks, but more attacks on Earth by the Viltrumites, and how Earth is dealing with that. And Earthlings are still a little bit mistrustful of Mark because of what had happened in the last couple episodes of the previous season with all these duplicates of Mark Invincible, and the idea of the Viltrumites coming. Do they really trust Mark? Do they really trust Invincible? And he's dealing with that. Same time, there are other issues unrelated to that. Other potential villains, other you have the Sequids who come back as a threat, and I guess there's a Mr. Liu that's another threat, and then that whole issue, and then there's Damien Darkblood, who's basically I guess like their version XB of Hellboy
Hellboy, I
or
suppose. Yeah.
Constantine or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically that kind of XP within this universe. So all these characters and issues that you've seen in previous seasons, they come back because people want to know what's going on with them, and they set up the things in future seasons. So it's not just the Viltrumites, but other threats as well. And then you have the Guardians of the Globe and things that happen with them. And some of the Guardians get separated by being in another universe, another reality. So, trying to get them to come back from that reality, from dealing with the Flaxons. So there's definitely a lot of stuff going on. And then in addition to all that, there's the issues that Marcus dealing with in his personal life with Eve and his social life, and that's something that impacts this season. So yeah, there's definitely a lot to unpack, a lot going on this season, so it's definitely good. And so hopefully you see their stories continue, and you hopefully don't have to wait too long. So
Yeah. I guess if trying to explain people to trying to get into it, there's a lot going on. So, a lot of these seasons you get, it's, oh, this must be a filler. This is a filler episode. It does not have time for a filler episode. You've got so many different genre almost sort of characters. A lot of them are very almost satire of different characters in other comic book IPs.
Taxis.
And they explore such different worlds of spiritual realm or science fiction and this big kind of like galactic empires. It packs a lot, and it's only eight episodes, but you are almost side stories happening simultaneously. So it is, that's why you kind of glued to each episode because so much is happening. Sometimes they wrap it up in that story in one episode, then you've got this overarching story. So you get your bang for your buck, honestly, with this series because you do show a lot of bloody adult consequences of this destructive power, which these superpowered beings. So I always say, when you have an off season, when you've got The Boys going on as well on another Prime series, but then you've got this when that ends. It's so you kind of like between the two, you've got this kind of like very much, I say, grounded consequences of super powered beings on people on Earth. So it's a good mix. But a lot of dense plot threads going on as well, and it's funny as well. It's got a nice, satire, a nice comic edge to it as well, they can.
Yeah, and speaking of which, one of the other characters who gets some time, like with, I guess you could call like alternate or subplots, is the character of Alan Cyclops out in
Voiced by
space and dealing with
Seth
the Coalition of
Rogen.
Planets. And he's voiced by Seth
Seth
Rogen,
Rogen,
who's also one of the producers of the show. So, he's comic but also serious at the same time. So they're dealing in the Coalition of Planets, the Coalition against the Viltrumites, and Nolan, Mark's father, the former Omni-Man, and dealing with that. Speaking of which, another thing that they're dealing with is Oliver, Mark's half-brother, and how Oliver wants to kind of be his own hero, his own superhero. So yeah, definitely a lot of stuff unpacked, a lot of stuff. Only eight episodes, I guess, but
That's it.
a lot of stuff going on in those eight episodes. So,
And a great voice cast when you do listen to it.
oh,
You
yeah.
Sandra, I mean, even Frog and all that, I recognize that voice, and I think, oh, is it Wonder? But yeah, if you just look at the credits, great voice cast in it. So you can, bit of a testament to the kind of show and the writing and the quality that you got going here. So if you haven't caught up with it, yeah, definitely give it a go if you like that genre, but you like to go a bit beyond it. And it's quite good. So, but lots to unpack there. Right. Thanks. I think that's it really for this month. But thanks to our regular host, Richard, Alfonso, and Andrew. And we'll see you next time. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this film and TVReview.com episode. Catch the latest film and TV reviews, together with regular episode content from the world of film and TV every week. See you soon. Would you like to reach our film and TV review podcast audience? Do you have a product or service of interest to film and TV home consumers or followers of the entertainment industry? Have a film or show production to publicize? For affordable price plans for all budgets, get in touch and find out about our introductory advertising options. Reach our audience of film and TV viewers and visit our site contact page at filmandtvreview.com, or you can email us at business@filmandtvreview.com. Reach out today.